Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. As always, thank you very much for tuning in as we continue to go through the big old monster box of baseball cards. And we're getting near the end, my friend. Yes, we're still going through 1993, but I was looking through the sets that I do have, and I think I only have four more. Let me see. We've got Score. We've got Tops. We've got Upper Deck. And yeah, that's it. So three more after this one. And this one is a good one, the Fleer Ultra set. And boy, do we have a random pull for you. One of my favorite players, the ultimate badass of baseball, Lynn Nolan Ryan. But don't you dare call him Lynn. He is the one and only Nolan Ryan, card number 636, an outstanding player from numerous generations of baseball. And as I've mentioned before, I've had the good fortune of meeting him not once but twice at Texas Rangers spring training games back in the early 1990s. So we'll talk about Nolan Ryan. We'll talk about the Fleer Ultra set in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about what you're talking about on our Twitter feed at Wax and Gum Stains. A lot of conversation, some about this set that we're going to talk about, the Fleer Ultra set. Most of it about the 93 Donruss set, which we did our last podcast on, and a whole lot of fun in some of the conversations in between yours truly and collectors. Let's actually first go back to a conversation about the Leaf Studio set, which we did a couple of podcasts ago. First of all, Kay Alcott responding, really enjoyed the podcast. Kirby Puckett was my favorite player growing up. That was our random poll there. Don't forget 93 Leaf, a great looking card. And as I mentioned in that podcast, actually I mentioned this in the 93 Donruss podcast, I thought I had 93 Leaf cards, but I don't. So whatever handful of cards I had, and I do remember actually having some, but apparently they ended up going out in the great purge of my card collection several years back. So I did have a brief ode to 93 Leaf, which was an outstanding set. And I again suggest if you have 20, 25 bucks just laying around and you want to make a purchase, that would be a great set to have. Not because it's going to increase in value anytime soon, but it's just a really beautiful set. And my favorite part, again, is actually the backs of the cards where the player photograph was in the foreground, and in the background you had cityscape shots. So again, if the player played for the Giants, you had a shot of the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. If he played for the Cubs, you had a shot of, you know, the Sears Tower in the background. Some really neat geographical influences on the backs of the cards there. So I like 93 Leaf. I just didn't like it enough, you know, 10, 12 years ago to keep any of the cards that I had. I didn't have a whole lot. I do know that. But whichever ones I had, apparently I didn't value a whole lot when I was just getting rid of boxes and boxes of cards a while back. Now, speaking of card backs, our friends at Baseball Card Backs sent me a picture of card number 143 from the 93 Studio set. And it's the late Ken Caminiti. And I marveled at the really neat backs to the 93 Leaf Studio cards. You didn't have any stats. Well, actually, you did have a couple of stats, you know, the team that the player did best against and the team that he did worst against. That was pretty much it. But on top of that, you have, you know, just all sorts of interesting biographical facts thrown in there. And the last one here, pet peeve, is Casey Kendall, who, of course, was a longtime teammate of his in Houston. And Baseball Card Backs was wondering about what was the vicious Caminiti-Kendall feud about. I'm sure Caminiti was just joking around here because I can't find anything that says that they hated one another. So I think Kendall was just filling out. And you know, understand, it's not like Ken Caminiti went to the Leaf Studio factory and had this one-on-one interview with people who wrote the information on the back of the cards. I can guarantee you what he did was he filled out probably a 10-question questionnaire that was left in every baseball player's locker. And he's probably, by the time he got to pet peeve, he couldn't think of something. And I bet you his locker mate, the guy next to him, stall mate, if you will, was probably just Casey Kendall. So, you know, okay, my pet peeve is this guy next to me. But did you know that Casey Kandel's mother was actually a star player in the Girls Professional Baseball League. Of course, that league that was in existence during World War II, when Major League Baseball owners feared that because of the war and because all their star players were involved in the war, that attendance would suffer and they would lose money. So they got the Professional Women's League going. And of course, that was documented in the movie League of Their Own, one of my favorite baseball movies, certainly out of the ordinary compared to a lot of baseball movies at the time, but really a well-done documentary. And of course, there's some artistic license done to it, but a well-done look at a chapter in baseball history that may have been forgotten had that movie not been made. But Casey Kandel's mother was an all-star player in that league. So I don't, maybe there's some jealousy there that Ken Caminiti's mother didn't have that resume. Who knows? But that's one of those fun facts on the back of the 93 Leaf set. Now, as for 93 Donruss, very similar to 92 Donruss, I was not a huge fan of it. I do agree that the Donruss sets in both years were much improved over, you know, what Donruss put out in 91 and 90, and you can even go back to 89 and 88, even though I kind of like those sets, 88 and 89 and 91. I didn't like 90. But still, even though it was a big improvement, I think when you compare it to other products from the time, and again, this is hindsight being 2020, and here we are 25 years later, it's a lot easier to do this. But even though Donruss put out a much better card in 92 and 93, was it as good as Stadium Club or Upper Deck or Fleer Ultra or Leaf Studio? In my opinion, no. That doesn't mean that it's a terrible set. I was just never a big fan of it. So that's why I say, hey, it's a nice set, but don't, you know, hurt yourself. Don't trip over your own feet trying to buy it. So there are some people who are ardent supporters of the 93 Donruss set, like there were 92 Donruss. One, Christian Anderson built this set pretty much out of two wax boxes bought at deep discount in 95. Only took 12 years to get it right. First card that they made that wasn't damaged the minute you took it out of the pack. And that's true. The card stock in 93 was even an improvement over 92. And of course, the 92 card stock was an improvement over the incredibly flimsy stuff that they put the cards on from 81. To 91. Cardboard Clubhouse. I absolutely love 93 Donruss. I'm currently working on building the set right now. And while he agrees with me that compared to the other options that were out there, Donruss wasn't quite as good as some of the other cards, but he has very sentimental reasons. And he didn't want to get into too many details, but basically he was in the hospital. He was in the second grade at this time, in the hospital for nearly a week, and he got a box of 93 Donruss as a gift from his mom. So obviously a very, very sentimental reason there. You're going through a very traumatic time in your life. Mom comes to the rescue with a box of baseball cards, and that's great. And that's one of the cool things about baseball cards, even though, you know, is it nerdy? Of course it is. Especially now as adults, you know, looking back on the, you know, the experience and going out and buying baseball cards, is it really uncool? Of course it is. Come on. And let's be honest. Okay. As cool as we may try to be, we're all nerds. Okay. I don't think there's a surprise there. You know, this isn't a leak coming out of the White House. Everything else is a leak coming out of the White House. But, you know, we collect baseball cards, or we collected baseball cards. We're nerds. It's okay. It's totally okay. But there's a sentimental value to these cards. Even though 93 Donruss, the individual cards, with a few exceptions, are pretty much probably just 2 cents a piece. You know, for somebody like Cardboard Clubhouse, there's a very sentimental value to it. And you are always going to love that set. And for me, you know, and I've mentioned this before, 89 Tops is one of my favorites. Is it a great set? No, but it was one of my favorites because that was the first set that I was introduced to. And guess what? It was Mom offering, hey, you want to buy some baseball cards? Sure. So that was always sentimental to me. 87 Tops, another one. You know, I had a, okay, you know, while we're bearing, you know, ripping open wounds here, summer of 93, had a bad breakup with a girlfriend. And I was, how old was I? 15. So when you're 15 years old and a girl you've got the hots for suddenly just says, let's be friends. I mean, that is just brutal. I mean, that is, the world is ending. And I'll be honest with you, I had sleepless nights. I mean, it was, you know, it was traumatic. It's not like it was even a very deep relationship. I mean, you're 15. What is it? So, one of the things that got me through that summer of 1993 was not only, you know, just buying and collecting cards in general, but the 87 top set. I used to buy boxes and boxes of the cello packs because I could get them pretty cheap at my hobby shop at the time. I think they were $20. And I ripped through those cards and I pull out the Barry Bonds and the Mark McGuire's and the Bo Jacksons. And I put together a couple sets, later sold them, made a few bucks. So, you know, what did I get out of, you know, a girl saying that she didn't want to date me anymore? Well, I got a lot of heartache, a lot of tears, but a lot of 87 tops and about $30 in resold sets. Let's move on, shall we? We'll kind of go to Robbie T86, also known as Booby Main, one of the top three Donruss designs of all time, along with 84 and 94. And again, I don't disagree with you on the design. I was just never a huge fan of 93 Donruss. Now, because I pretty much stopped shopping for new cards in 94, I had to go back and look up what 94 Donruss looked like. And I remember what they looked like because I actually did buy in 94 some hockey cards. And Donruss actually made hockey cards for the 94-95 season. And they used the same design. And this was very typical with card companies at this point in time. They would basically recycle the same design template for all sports, football, basketball, hockey, you name it. And the 94 Donruss design was absolutely beautiful. And just doing a quick Google images search for the baseball cards, because again, I didn't collect the 94 Donruss baseball set. But looking back at those, that was really the giant leap forward for Donruss because it was very reminiscent of Stadium Club in particular, but also Upper Deck and Ultra and Bowman. So by 94, Donruss got there. 92 and 93, they made some big steps forward. It just took a little while to eventually get to a very good product, which they had in 1994. Hayward Got a Ring says the best Donruss design is 83 Action All-Stars. And I am unanimous in this. Yes, yes, you are. But 83 Action All-Stars, I do remember, too. That was a pretty interesting design as well. We had a fun back and forth, me and Peter Steinberg and Tony L. In regards to playing off the whole Tim Salmon, Matt Salmon fish jokes. I'll just direct you to the Wax and Gum Stains Twitter feed for that. Chris Starr certainly remembers seeing Tim Salmon in Midland, Texas as a kid. And he sends us a scan of the 91 Classic Best Minor League card of Tim Salmon with the Midland Angels. Now, I commented on the 93 Donruss podcast that I liked the picture that was used because even though the Angels changed their uniforms in 93, kind of that sort of throwback look to what they wore in the late 60s, I've always liked that look that they had from 72 to 92, which had just a few tweaks over the years, but I always liked that look. And I mentioned that I always liked the big A logo hat that they wore. Well, the Midland Angels, I had totally forgotten about this logo until I saw this card. The Midland Angels had the state of Texas in dark blue outlined in red in the background. They had the letter M on top, and it's actually very similar to what the Miami Marlins have these days. And then the halo is kind of teetering on the left peak, if you will, of the letter M. It's a great look, and it was really fun to kind of see that logo once again. So thanks for sending that card, Chris. And finally, I would like to thank WaxPack916 for forwarding a tweet that was sent out by our fan Ryan Cracknell, who of course is a writer for Beckett.com. Ryan found a YouTube video of a TV commercial for the 92 Donruss set. I highly recommend, just go to YouTube and type in 1992 Donruss baseball and see what pops up. But it's very 1992. My goodness, it is 1992. Including the guy doing the voiceover. It's radical. I mean, the only thing missing from this cartoon or commercial, rather, is a cartoon like Bart Simpson. You know, don't have a cow, man. It's 92 Donruss. And, you know, they're flipping through images of the cards and they're like, you know, cool rookies. And the rookie card is Todd Van Poppel, who, of course, is just the poster child of bad rated rookie cards from the early 90s, along with Hensley Mullins, amongst others. But it was very, very, very funny to see that 92 Donruss commercial. So thanks to Ryan Cracknell of Beckett.com for finding it. And thanks to WaxPack916 for sending it. And his comment was sizzling new for 92. And that was actually one of the lines that was in there. And as for somebody who works in broadcasting for a living and often has to write commercial ad copy, that's a brutal line there. And again, with the pukey guy, you know, voiceover, sizzling new for 92. So it was pretty interesting to see. So look for it yourself at YouTube. Again, just type in 1992 Donruss Baseball and see what you can find there. All right. So we had lots of really fun stuff on the Wax and Gum Stains Twitter feed. It's open 24/7. Tell all of your collector friends, whether they collect now or collected in the past. There's a lot of great conversation, not just about the players that we do with random pulls, not just with the sets that we talk about, but anything in the hobby. You're more than welcome to post questions, comments, scans of cards that you found. It's always entertaining there. Now, before we talk about 93 Fleer Ultra, just a reminder that we will have a survey coming out. In fact, I'm working on it today, today being Friday. So it will be up this weekend, and we'll run it for probably a week. But it is a survey that is basically going to help guide this podcast moving forward. As I mentioned, after this podcast, only three more sets from 93, and then that's it for my personal monster box. So first, I want to find out what you like about the podcast, what you don't like about the podcast, what you would like more from the podcast, and then really the direction. Do we go back to the beginning of the monster box, spend a little less time talking about the set itself and maybe a little more about the player? That would probably mean a shorter podcast, which I am not opposed to. Or do we go back, you know, again, this is my personal collection. Do we just go back into the archives even more? I do have quite a bit of a collection going back as far back as 1954. I don't have a Topps card from every year, but most years. I do have one from 1957 through 1980. So we can do random polls and discussions about that. I'm perfectly fine with that. So if you are a frequent listener of this show, please do respond to that survey. We will send out links on Twitter throughout the weekend and the next several days. I do ask you, please just take it one time. Don't stuff the ballot box, but please do take part in that survey. I do appreciate it. All right, now as for 93 Fleer Ultra, let's take a look at our random pull, card number 636, Nolan Ryan. Like I said, the ultimate baseball badass, at least for this generation. Obviously, you can say Ty Cobb early in the 20th century. There's other players along the way for various reasons. Jimmy Fox, you could say Babe Ruth. But for my generation, Nolan Ryan was not just the ultimate badass, but the proof early on that you could play the game at a high level into your early 40s. And of course, baseball players playing into their 40s is nothing new. But Nolan Ryan was still playing an A game right up until the very end. Now, the end was not very pretty. In fact, it was very sudden. But he had just an outstanding career. And unfortunately, one of the downsides of Fleer Ultra is they couldn't completely show it. So there is a little downside to 93 FLIR Ultra, including the fact that they basically recycled the 92 template. There were a couple of minor tweaks, but since 92 was such a good set, 93, you know, why change a good thing? And I'm always up for different looks for different sets every year, but FLIR Ultra, you know, they just kind of went, you know what? Why fix it if it ain't broken? And you look at the front of the card, very similar to the 92 set, a great action shot of Nolan Ryan. And I believe this is a warm-up pitch. As you can see in the background, there's an outfielder throwing the ball, and I'm assuming that that's an actual outfielder and not an advertisement on the outfield wall. But I do believe, looking at it, that it's a warm-up pitch here. But Nolan Ryan, and as somebody who saw him live in person pitching at a spring training game, even at the age, let's see, he would have been, I think, 40 or 41 at the time, that guy could still zip it across the mound. You know, he was a guy who, even at the advanced age, was still popping a fastball at 98 miles an hour. That's pretty darn impressive. Good old Texas boy here in the warm-up pitch here in the Texas Rangers uniform of the late 80s and early 90s that over time I've kind of grown to like again. I was never big on it back then, but it's kind of cool. Very, very basic. And so is the design for FLIR Ultra. Again, you have the action shot that takes up the majority of the front here. Again, like most progressive card designs in 1992 and 93, no borders. With the exception of the very bottom here, you've got essentially a borderless picture here. And much like Top Stadium Club, you have the UV coating. You have the very crisp colors here. And it really provided a very nice look for the set that year. Now, right beneath Nolan Ryan's foot in this case, you have one bar going left to right with his name. In the rather 1993 Phil Donahue talk show purple. And then right beneath that, you have a little bar just kind of floating in the middle with the team name and the position that he played for. And then in the 92 set, I mentioned that the bottom frame, which had kind of this dark green look to it and almost blended in, it looked like a baseball field. It looked like FLIR Ultra was trying to change it from the green grass to almost the outfield clay or the warning track. So you have this kind of orangey red marble look here, a very classy look. And I think the only downside to this design is the FLIR Ultra logo is ginormous. I mean, you can see it's about as big as Nolan Ryan's head. So that is a little distracting, but again, because most of the front of the card is designated for the photograph, it actually, you know, the overall design wins over that one little problem there. Now, the only other problem I have, and this wasn't exclusive to FLIR Ultra, but also to a lot of other card companies at the time, is they were shying away from doing complete career stats because they were showing the backs of the cards, you know, showing off more pictures or more design elements. And a guy like Nolan Ryan is a great example of why you can't just boil his stats down into the season before and his career stats. And you look at Nolan Ryan, I mean, they can barely cram the career stats of this guy on the one line. I mean, all the numbers are running into each other here because he had played for so long, you know, started his professional career in 1966. And, you know, all the numbers add up by the time you're going into 1993. I do have Nolan Ryan's Topps card from that year. I believe it's card number one in that set. And you need a magnifying glass to read all the stats. But I still give kudos to Topps for covering four decades of Major League Baseball dominance by this pitcher on the back of their card. So FLIR Ultra, that's the one knock I have. When you have, you know, you have a young guy, you know, like we have, you know, I've seen, you know, Manny Ramirez, you know, that rookie card, Joey Bell or Albert Bell, excuse me. You know, we had him on the 92 FLIR Ultra set. A guy who was just starting out his career, you could sum things up in two lines. Nolan Ryan, you couldn't. I kind of wish there was some way they would have worked around that. Of course, it would have taken away from the consistency of the other cards, but you know, Nolan Ryan, you can't just do it in two lines. And the same thing for other veteran stars at that point in time, George Brett and Robin Yount and Cal Ripken and Paul Molitor. And, you know, Carlton Fisk was still playing then. it just seemed a little unfair. So that's one thing I didn't really like about the 93 FLIR Ultra set. Now, you have a very similar back to the 92 FLIR Ultra set. No surprise there. But again, it worked. I actually like the artwork on the back of 93 better than 92. It especially looks really nice on this particular card. As you have the card number in the upper left-hand corner, the team logo in the upper right-hand corner, and of course with this blue and orange sky, it actually looks like the Texas Rangers are setting in the west, which was often the case by August on any given season. But you have a couple of pictures here, and it's not too cluttered with pictures and stats, so I guess that's a good thing about keeping the stat line to just two lines. But you have, you know, the mugshot, basically, just the relaxed, casual, you know, pose shot. And then you have the action shot. And, of course, Nolan Ryan throwing heat at you is pretty much a good action shot. And it blends really well with the baseball field background and also that reddish marble look that you saw in the bottom of the front of the car was also featured at an angle on the left side of the back of the card, along with the player's personal information and his name on the top bar, the stats on the bottom bar, and that was pretty much it. So, again, a very quality card, not all that different from 92, and normally you would knock that. In fact, I go back to Donruss in 82 and 83. They rolled out pretty much the same design. Of course, it was a pretty clunky design, so it's easy to mock the 83 set for being kind of boring. They didn't do much from 82. And while FLIR Ultra did not rock the boat in 93, it still came out with just a really good design and you know, some great star players as well. A 650-card set. And it was interesting how they broke the series up, because normally when you break up a card set into two series or three series, you do it by even numbers, or, you know, you would have 325 for series one, 325 for series two. Well, Ultra didn't do that. Series one was 300 cards. Series two was 350 cards. And the reason why is series two featured 25 cards each for the Florida Marlins and the Colorado Rockies. So, unlike Donruss, and I talked about this in our last podcast, where the Rockies and Marlins player cards just featured the logo of the team, but it didn't show them in their new uniform, Ultra waited a little bit, included them in Series 2. And personally, I like that, because the whole, this guy has been traded to a new team, or this guy plays for a new team, that's so 1970s. And if Topps didn't airbrush the logo out or try to airbrush a new uniform on the player, then you had, and you saw this more on the hockey cards than baseball cards, but you would have the, you know, the little black letters, now plays for Oakland. You know, it was just like, oh, come on, you guys couldn't even get out the paintbrush for this guy. So that's one thing that I like about the FLIR Ultra set. And also, much like a lot of the sets from 1993, including some of the premium sets, FLIR Ultra is actually very affordable. I've seen the quote-unquote wax boxes, of course, you know, they're foil packs. I've seen, you know, jumbo boxes going for around $20. I've seen the base set boxes going for anywhere from $15 to $25, depending on where you buy them. So much like Leaf, much like Leaf Studio, and much like a lot of the other really good sets that came out, because there were so many at that time, and of course, you know, FLIR Ultra was one of about 20 sets released in 1993, the market's a little oversaturated, the value of the cards are down, but also the price to get in is down. So this is another set where I say, if you have $20-$25 laying around and you want to put together just a real nice set, not to pay off your student loans, but just to have a really cool set and some really good players, you know, not only legends like Nolan Ryan, but guys like Mike Piazza, Manny Ramirez, Ken Griffey Jr., Jim Thome, you know, a lot of the young stars from this generation, the 93 Ultra set is definitely a good way to go about that. Also, you can still find a nice little treat here. While there weren't a whole lot of parallels, there were some inserts like award winners, home run kings, all-star cards, all rookie team as well. And there wasn't really a great rookie base here. I mean, you did have Piazza, you did have the Manny Ramirez, but you know, Tim Salmon's another one, but that's pretty much it. there is the Dennis Eckersley insert, very similar to what Ultra did in 1992 with Tony Gwynn. So you had the 12-card kind of career perspective of Dennis Eckersley, who, of course, his career was winding down as a reliever with Oakland, but it went through, you know, all of his time through Cleveland and Chicago and everywhere else that he went. But like the Gwynn inserts in 1992, Dennis Eckersley signed 2,000 cards, and he autographed all 10 cards in the series, but it wasn't really documented which cards were signed or how many are out there. So there is still a number of these floating around. So if you're lucky, you may be able to land one of these. And while Dennis Eckersley is certainly not Ken Griffey Jr., I mean, this is a guy who had a phenomenal career. And to get an autographed card, because it was a limited number card, there is still some value to it. And it's kind of neat. You know, like I said, Eckersley was an outstanding player. And, you know, why not take advantage of one of these cards if you happen to find it in your box? So definitely a card set that I would say, you know, if you have just a few extra bucks of disposable income, by all means, go for it. Now, what more can I say about Nolan Ryan? I mean, he is, after all, Nolan Ryan, arguably the best pitcher in the last half century. And you could say one of the top, three, maybe? Top five, if you want to get into an argument, in baseball history. Of course, you have Walter Johnson, you have Christy Mathewson, you have Cy Young. I mean, no awards have been named after Nolan Ryan yet. But you can certainly say that Nolan Ryan was one of the best pitchers, if not the best, in the last half century. And, of course, you can put players like Roger Clemens up there. You could put Steve Carlton up there. You could put Randy Johnson, Sandy Koufax. You can put Bob Feller. There's a number that you could put right up there, but you can make a very good argument that Nolan Ryan is and should be number one. So you already know about the career stats. You already know about the 7 no-hitters. You know about the more than 5,000, in fact, 5,714 career strikeouts, to be precise. So let me just throw in a few more tidbits that make the Nolan Ryan story even more amazing. He grew up in South Texas. By the age of 6 weeks, his family settled into Alvin, Texas, and that is where he would gain some fame as a phenomenal all-star pitcher, even in his preteen years. And he pitched his first no-hitter as a teenager. I found a very interesting stat here from Alvin High School. He held the school's single-game strikeout record, where he struck out 21 hitters. Oh, by the way, in a 7-inning game, that's pretty dominant. And interestingly, that record was tied by Alvin High School pitchers Aaron Stewart and Josh Land in the same week just a few years ago, back in 2009. So be curious to see where those guys have gone since. Now, while he was pitching at Alvin High School, Red Murph, longtime scout for the Mets, who also signed Jerry Grody, a longtime catcher for the Mets. Well, he goes out and he sees Ryan, and he's watching how opposing batters don't want to hit him. He's watching how catchers are complaining about how they're breaking their fingers trying to catch Nolan Ryan. And Murph talks to the head coach at Alvin High School, Jim Watson, and he just absolutely loves what Nolan Ryan is doing, even as, I believe it was a sophomore, so what, 15 years old, this guy's setting the world on fire. So in Murph's report back to the Mets, he writes, and I quote, "Ryan has the best arm I've seen in my life." So pretty heady things. And of course, scouts will sometimes overhype certain aspects of a player, but clearly Red Murph had seen all he needed to see in Nolan Ryan. So the Mets sign him, they draft him in 1965. He goes to the 12th round, and that's the funny thing. You look back at Nolan Ryan, you're thinking, oh, he was a first overall draft pick. No, 12th round. In fact, the baseball draft was in its infancy. That was the first year of the baseball draft as we know it in 1965. Scouting was completely different then than it was now, so it's understandable that he fell so many picks behind. And he starts working his way up through the minor leagues, but because the Mets are so bad, he very quickly works his way up to New York. He was the second youngest player in the major leagues. Here's the answer to the trivia question: who was the first strikeout in Nolan Ryan's career? It would be Pat Jarvis. So in case you were wondering, former Atlanta Brave, Montreal Expo, former sheriff in Georgia, also jailed on corruption charges, but we won't hold that against him. So that was K number one of 5,714 for Nolan Ryan. Now, he dealt with injuries. He dealt with service time with the Army Reserve. He didn't have much of a 1967 season. Came in late in 1968. And was part of the Miracle Mets World Series run in 1969. In fact, had a crucial relief appearance in Game 3 of the NLCS in 1969. He threw 7 innings of relief in Game 3, helping the Mets sweep the Braves in the NLCS. And then in the World Series against the Orioles, he appeared in Game 3 once again. 2 1/3 shutout innings. He actually got the victory in that game. And believe it or not, the only World Series appearance and thusly win in Nolan Ryan's career. And that's one of the amazing things about his career. And I'll go through a couple other interesting tidbits about him. No matter how phenomenal Nolan Ryan was individually, he was on some teams. In fact, he wouldn't make the playoffs for another 10 years. He would appear in the playoffs with the Angels in 1979. Again, with the Astros in 1980 and 86. And that was it. So his first World Series was his only World Series, and that's why it goes to show, you know, when a young professional sports team, and this can be any sport, when they get to the championship round, you hear it from the veteran players. They say, you need to enjoy this and you need to make the best of this because you never know if you're going to get that second chance. And Nolan Ryan is a great example of it. Now, he did ultimately win in 1969, but there was no guarantee that he would ever see a World Series again, and he never did. And he played through 1993, which is just amazing. Now, what's even more amazing is that the Mets gave him up in what is arguably the worst trade in New York Mets history, as he was sent to the California Angels along with Don Rose, Francisco Estrada, and Leroy Stanton for Jim Fregosi. Now, looking back with 2020 vision, it probably was the worst trade in New York Mets history. You could argue it was the best trade in Angels history. But let's take the Wayback Machine to 1971. This was after the 71 season. And let's take a look back at the deal here. Now, the 71 Mets rotation looked like this. You had Tom Seaver, of course, leading the way. You had Gary Gentry, who went 12-11, had a pretty respectable 71 season. You had the lefty Jerry Kuzman, who was a little off in 71, but still a very dependable player. In fact, he would pitch for the Mets for quite a while afterwards. You had the veteran Ray Sadecki at number 4, and Ryan was your number 5 pitcher. Now, Sadecki would eventually leave the Mets, and the Mets would want 2 lefties in the rotation. Well, they had the up-and-coming John Matlack, who did appear in a handful of games, didn't do very well in 71. But clearly, the Mets organization was looking at Matlack and thought, okay, this guy is going to be the future and not necessarily the inconsistent Ryan. Of course, as I mentioned, Ryan did have some injury issues. He had a lot of blister issues very early on in his career. And even though he could throw heat, there was some thought that this guy was only a fastball pitcher. Now, nothing could be further from the truth, as he had a devastating curveball, but also he picked up some tips on how to offer up a different variety of pitches from being a teammate with Tom Seaver. So Matlack, as it would turn out, who would be the rookie of the year in the National League in 72, had some very productive years with the Mets until he left them in 1978. You know, Matlack was an up-and-coming arm, and of course, you know, he was a lefty, and teams value lefties. So you can kind of see, okay, Ryan we like, but he's been kind of up and down, and yeah, okay, he had, you know, a pretty decent 1969 season, 1970 season, with the team. But you look at wins and losses, you know, he was 10-14 in 71. His earned run average was actually going up. It was approaching four. So yeah, this guy could throw a bunch of strikeouts, but also he was wild. He could walk a lot of batters too. In fact, his strikeout to walk ratio in his career is actually not very flattering, where he has 5,714 strikeouts, but also 2,795 walks. So it's 2-1, which is not bad, but for a guy with over 5,700 strikeouts, having, you know, nearly 2,800 walks is a bit of a blemish. So if you're the Mets, and it's 1971, you like the lefty Matt Lack coming up through the organization, it looks like Ryan might be a bust. So you go out and you acquire the all-star infielder in Jim Fregosi. And Fregosi, let's not forget, was a star with the Angels. He played primarily at shortstop, but also at third base. And here was a guy who was coming off his fifth consecutive, or I shouldn't say coming off, because he wasn't an all-star in 71, but he was an all-star for the Angels in 64, and then five consecutive seasons, 66 through 70, he made the all-star team. And here was a guy who, despite having a bad 1970 season at the plate, or 71 season, again, I'm getting my years mixed up, he only batted .233 in 1971. You know, this is a guy who, at the age of 29, still had a lot of upside. Hey, he's an all-star. He's a guy who could hit the ball out of the park. He was a gold glover. He was a distant candidate in MVP voting in the American League for many years. He was dependable. He wasn't often that injured, although he did suffer some injuries in 71. You're thinking, ah, it's a fluke. Here's a guy who could shore up our infield. We're giving up a player that may or may not be good, and we're also giving up a few other guys who may not amount to much. And by the way, Don Rose and Francisco Estrada did not have very lengthy careers. In fact, both guys were out of baseball by, I think, 75. And Leroy Stanton actually did have a decent career, not only with the Angels, but he had a pretty good career, or pretty good year, as an original member of the Seattle Mariners in 1977. His career was done in 78, though. So, you know, not a whole lot. You know, those players kind of get lost in the shuffle there. But again, if you're looking at 1971, so Ryan seems to be going backwards a little bit. Matt Lack is going forwards and is left-handed. And you can get an all-star infielder in Jim Fregosi. So when you look at it from that standpoint, it wasn't that bad of a deal for the Mets. And of course, the outcry, well, there wasn't much of one other than Ryan. Ryan wanted to stay in New York. He didn't want to go to Anaheim. The Angels were a second-tier team. They were always in the shadow of the Dodgers, and it didn't seem like a good deal for him. Plus, you know, pitching in the American League, which is often a little more offensive involved, it wasn't a good deal for a National League pitcher, especially in a pitcher's park like Shea Stadium. So he's unhappy, but at the time, Mets fans aren't too upset. Well, very quickly, the deal went bad. Fregosi suffered through quite a few injuries in 72, and by the middle of the 73 season, and remember, this was the Miracle Mets of 73, or the Amazing Mets, I forget which, Amazing or Miracle 69-73. Anyways, the Mets surprised the world by actually making it to the World Series that year. The Mets were just so disenchanted with Fregosi, they just let him go, basically just traded him for cash to the Texas Rangers. And of course, that was a death knell on Fregosi's career. The Rangers were a bumbling team back then. He again was suffering through a whole slew of injuries, was never the same player as he was with the Angels, and his playing career ends in 78 with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, interestingly, Fregosi would get into managing, and he would manage Nolan Ryan and the Angels to the playoffs in 1979. Of course, Fregosi also managed Chicago, Philadelphia, Toronto later on in his life, was the manager of the Phillies in 93, getting them to the World Series, which they lost to Toronto. And Fregosi passed away back in 2014. May God rest his soul. And even though Fregosi actually had a pretty decent career numbers-wise across the board, and was one of the best California Angels in the 1960s, he will always be remembered as the guy that was given to the New York Mets for Nolan Ryan. And of course, Ryan's career just takes off in 1972. And again, I'm not going to sit here and go through all the stats. You know, again, we had no hitter upon no hitter. You had strikeout records falling. You had wins piling up for Ryan, not necessarily for the Angels. Like I said, they were kind of just a ho-hum team for much of his time there. Now, he got into a contract dispute with the Angels. Buzzy Bavasi was their general manager. Wouldn't be the first mistake he made in his general managing career. Basically just lets Ryan walk. Ryan signs the first $1 million contract in baseball with the Houston Astros. And when I say million, I mean $1 million per year. So he cashes in with Houston. He goes back home, essentially, helps the Astros get to the playoffs in 1980 and later on 1986. And the Astros were marginally better for the most part in their non-playoff years than the Angels ever were. Well, after the 1988 season, again, he's at odds with the management on what he's worth. So he walks and goes cross-state to the American League rival, Texas Rangers. And that's where he cements his legend as a player, of course, getting 5,000 strikeouts, getting 300 wins, getting no-hitters number 6 and number 7. And he was chugging along just fine throughout 1992 and into 1993. And unfortunately, his end of his career was not very good. He had already announced that 93 would be his final season, but he blew his arm out in a game in September of 1993. In fact, tore a ligament. He tried to rebound from that, throw another pitch after tearing his ligament, and it just wasn't going to go, despite the fact that the pitch was literally, seriously, clocked at 98 miles an hour. So he struggled through that. His last start was just an absolute disaster, leaving in the first inning without recording an out and trailing 5-0. So his career officially ends September 22nd, 1993. He was supposed to make it a couple more starts, but wasn't able to do that, thus concluding a major league record 27-season career. He was the final active player from the 1960s to retire. He was able to just surpass Carlton Fisk, who also had a rather ignominious end to his career with the White Sox earlier in 1993. But Nolan Ryan would carry on, of course, very involved in minor league baseball, the owner of the Corpus Christi Hooks and the Round Rock Express, minor league affiliates of the Houston Astros at one point in time. They've also been associated with the Texas Rangers. The Express did a few years ago. And he is also very much involved in the ownership in Major League Baseball, as is well known. He was the president of the Rangers starting in 2008, would eventually move up to CEO and minority owner. And while the Rangers were at their most successful in the early 2010s, if you will, he was slowly getting pushed out. Eventually, at the end of the 2013 season, he would walk from Texas and go back to Houston, as he has been the special assistant to owner Jim Crane ever since the start of the 2014 season. And Nolan Ryan, who is actually 70 years old now, it's kind of hard to believe that because he was just so physically fit for so long and went so long, didn't age gracefully, actually suffered a heart attack back in 2000, had a double coronary bypass. I remember hearing that back then and going, wait, what? Nolan Ryan, the good old cowboy who was still throwing heat in 1993? Yeah, you know, he dealt with the heart attack in 2000. And by all accounts, is still doing just fine, again, at the age of 70. Just turned 70 just a few weeks ago, and is still very active with the Houston Astros. Also, his family is still active in baseball as well, as he had three children, Reed, Reese, and Wendy. Reed and Reese both went to Texas Christian University. They were both pitchers. And Reed also had a brief pro career. He is now the president of the Houston Astros. Now, I mentioned a few other interesting tidbits about Nolan Ryan. And as I mentioned, you know, here's a guy who put up a lot of wins. He also put up a lot of losses, in many instances, not his fault, because he was on some so-so teams. But also, as I mentioned, 2,795 base on balls. That is the most in Major League history. In fact, almost 1,000 more than the second place Steve Carlton. He is also one of only four pitchers in the Hall of Fame who have more strikeouts than innings pitched. He is currently the only major league player to have his number retired by at least three different teams: the Angels, Astros, and Rangers. Well, somehow the Mets forgot to do that. Now, that means that other than Jackie Robinson, whose number 42 was retired across Major League Baseball, Ryan is the only player to have that honor. He's also the all-time leader in no-hitters, no surprise, with seven. He also had 12 one-hitters, tied with Bob Feller in that category, and 18 two-hitters. So what's interesting is Nolan Ryan, in his very lengthy career, put himself in a position to no-hit a team 37 times and was successful seven times. Amazingly, did not pitch a perfect game. I shouldn't say amazingly, because like I said, it wasn't like he was always dialed into the strike zone. He had a lot of strikeouts, but he did walk quite a few batters. What is amazing, though, is Nolan Ryan never won a Cy Young Award. That is crazy. And one other fun note here, he is the only pitcher in baseball history to have struck out seven pairs of fathers and sons. How cool is that? By the way, the Cy Young Award discussion, the closest he ever got to winning it was in 1973, a banner year for him, going 21-16, 2.87 earned run average, leading the major leagues with 383 strikeouts. He finished second to Jim Palmer. And it wasn't even close. Jim Palmer, I wouldn't say ran away with the AL Cy Young Award voting back in 73, but it wasn't like he just beat him out by a hair there. So that was the closest he got. Several times he finished third in the voting, but never won the Cy Young Award. And that's kind of bizarre. You think all these wins, all these strikeouts, all these no-hitters, all this dominance that Nolan Ryan had, not Cy Young Award worthy. And of course, he was at his best when he was with California, still very good when he was with the Houston Astros, but he would never be able to dial up the kind of performance that he could in his later years. An eight-time All-Star, by the way, in case you were wondering. So there you go. Nolan Ryan, who had a phenomenal career, which is an understatement, on a phenomenal 1993 Ultra card set. And again, this is one of those sets where, because there was so much product out there, are the cards individually valuable? No. But if you have a few extra bucks of disposable income and you feel like going out and collecting a really nice set, I very highly recommend FLIR Ultra. It is worth dropping $20, $25, $30, picking up a couple boxes and just seeing what you get. Because you might get some great veterans like Nolan Ryan. You may get some cool rookie cards like Mike Piazza. You may get one of those Dennis Eckersley signed cards. They're still floating around here 24 years later. All right, that's our look at 93 FLIR Ultra. You're more than welcome to talk about that set or Nolan Ryan or anything else in the hobby at our Twitter feed at Wax and Gum Stains. And just a reminder, we will be sending out that survey soon, so keep an eye out for it. On our Twitter feed, we'll send out the link there. But that will be active this weekend and for the next several days, so please do take part in it. Let us know what you like and what you don't like about Wax Ecstatic, and we will certainly get the information and make the best of it so that we know how we're doing now, how we can do better down the line. And again, the direction, you know, where does the podcast go? Once we get through 93, we'll do those special podcasts about the no logo cards or the team produced sets or the minor league cards. We'll do a couple, maybe three podcasts on those. And then we turn the page. So where do we go from there? And no, we're not going to do hockey. Not yet. Certainly not now. Very busy. Hopefully I can get to it at some point in time, but now is not the best time to do it. So we're going to be sticking with baseball cards. It's just, where do we go from here? So please do take part in that survey. All right, our next podcast will be about a set that couldn't keep up with the competition. They put out some good cards, But like Donruss, they were just a step behind. We're talking about 93 Score, a very sharp, very nice-looking set. But when you look at the Fleer Ultras of the world back then, you look at Bowman, we'll look at Upper Deck later, they couldn't quite keep up with the Joneses. So we'll take a look at Score and our random pull from that set as well. On our next edition of Wax Ecstatic, it'll come your way on Tuesday via Audio Boom and iTunes. And don't forget, you can listen to our archive at any time at audioboom.com. Just type in Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thanks again for tuning in to Wax Ecstatic. We'll see you next time.